Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, this is Curl Bro, and I support Gen X Grown Up on Patreon, and you should too. And if you don't, I hope you leave enough room for my fists, because I'm going to ram it in your stomach and break your spine. Just go to genxgrownup.com/Patreon to sign up today.
No life, no fun. Don't you know that you're a grown up?
Gen X Grown Up is a YouTube channel, website, and audio podcast you're listening to right now. All made for and by people who love exploring media, games, tech, and toys of yesterday and today through the eyes of Gen Xers who refuse to grow up.
Your dinner cannot just be french fries. Basically, life sucks.
Welcome back, Gen X Grown Up Podcast listeners, to this, the backtrack edition of the Gen X Grown Up Podcast. I am John. Joining me, as always, of course, is George.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
It would not be a show without Mo. Hey, man.
Hey, everybody.
The backtrack episodes are, as you know, where we pick a single nostalgic topic and dig in deep. And you probably know that for most Gen Xers, board games were a big part of how we played together. In 1981, a new board game came along where rolling the dice and moving your piece was secondary to your knowledge of trivia and pop culture. In this backtrack, we're going around the board collecting pie pieces as we look back on the history of Trivial Pursuit. And we're going to attempt to not start any fights during this backtrack, like probably were started during sessions of Trivial Pursuit.
Oh yeah,
back
absolutely.
In the day. We'll do our best. Mo, no fighting with George, okay? Just ground
rules. I can't promise that.
Fair right. Enough. Okay.
We don't even have to be playing a board game for that to happen.
Before we get into that, let's start with some fourth listener email, though. And you might know that we've been cross-posting all of our back catalog of episodes to a new YouTube channel, which is called, appropriately enough, Gen X Grown Up Podcast over on YouTube. And so people are starting to find our show over there and comment on the videos. So it could be an older video, and that's what I have this time as a comment on Schoolhouse Rock when it posted over on YouTube.
Oh,
now, as you might imagine, that thing's never getting monetized because it's full of copyrighted music, but it's still a fantastic episode. I really enjoyed doing it. I like re-listening to. And Michael Schwartz saw that episode over on YouTube and left us a comment. Here's what Michael had to say. Schoolhouse Rock did not have the impact on me as other Gen Xers. Rather, it was The Electric Company that I remember most. You guys remember Electric Company?
Yeah.
The Electric Company.
Yeah.
It's where
Spider-Man.
The first, the live action Spider-Man. That's what I was going to say.
Yeah. And Morgan Freeman was on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. His character, I forget what he's like, the groovy something. I know. He was so cool. He was so cool in that. I love The Electric Company. Michael goes on to say, but I do fondly recall The Great American Melting Pot and The Shot Heard Round the World, two of his favorite Schoolhouse Rock. Yeah. Good ones. And both of those were from the American history facet of Schoolhouse Rock. Yeah, there's good ones in there. He says, thanks for the retrospective, guys. Always fun, Michael. Well, cool. Thank you, Michael.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Nice.
We love that you found us over on YouTube. We hope you also watch our regular channel. And we have some other child channels or splinter channels, you might want to call them, you can check out. And you, listener, if you weren't aware, if you liked listening things on YouTube, we're over there too. So you can check out an episode that you want to find and listen to it there as well. Michael, we love that you wrote in and had comment over on the YouTube channel. We appreciate every time a fourth listener writes in, lets us know how we're doing. If you would like to have your email featured here on the show, it is drop dead easy. Just hit us up at podcast@genxgrownup.com and read every single one. And most of them, like Michael's, will eventually make the show.
You know, I feel like Michael missed an opportunity there.
Oh, well, how's that?
Yeah, his sign off should have been, may the Schwartz be with you.
Oh, Michael Schwartz. Perfect. Michael.
I bet you he's never heard that one.
He's probably sick of that joke. He's like, ha ha, very funny, George. Yeah, he's not having it. Hey, with that good business behind us, let's jump into the body of this backtrack on Trivial Pursuit right after this.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
You're listening to Gen X Grown Up. But if you have a friend who's not yet listening, why not? Tell them about us. They'll thank you later.
Would my esteemed colleague kindly repeat the question?
Gladly, Senator. What time does Wee Willie Winkie run through the town?
Trivial Pursuit. It's more than a game. It's a national obsession. It's here.
Big Bird!
It's there. It's everywhere. And the fun keeps coming. Trivial Pursuit. Because every American is entitled to life, liberty, and the pursuit of trivia. From South Show and Ryder.
All right, we've got that dark blue box open. We've unfolded the board. We're all picking our colors for the pie. We got the pie pieces sorted. We're about to play some Trivial Pursuit. So let's get started talking about the origin of this game. It was first created on December 15th, 1979 in Montreal, Quebec by Chris Haney, who was a photo editor for Montreal's Gazette, and his buddy Scott Abbott, a sports editor for the Canadian Press. What happened was they had trouble finding all of their Scrabble pieces. They're like, let's play Scrabble, but you need a certain number. If you don't have all the E's or all the A's, you're screwed.
Not fair. Right. It's not fair.
And so they're like, let's just make up our own game. So that's what led to them creating Trivial Pursuit.
Jeez.
Yeah. I mean, and interestingly enough, it didn't take them very long to create the game and get it initially licensed. They put it over with a company called Salchow and Richter Ryder in 1982. But then Parker Brothers ended up buying it, the licensing after that in 1988. Parker Brothers, of course, later became Hasbro.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But there was another group, Virgin Group. They were going to get it, but then they turned down the licensing rights. And it ended up going straight all the way to Hasbro in 2008 for $80 million.
2008?
Not pie chunks or anything. $80 million in 2008.
Wow. And it's infinitely expandable. It's like the game never gets old.
Yeah.
Because it's trivia.
Oh, yeah.
And it's ridiculously simple, too. I understand why it didn't take them long to make it. It's like, well, let's draw a wagon wheel. And here we go. Done.
It just blows me away of how popular this game was. I mean, they said as of 2014, they sold over 100 million games. I mean, and it was like in 26 countries, 17 languages.
Wow.
And then I guess the company Northern Plastics of Elroy, Wisconsin, which I guess makes all the plastic pieces, produced 30 million games just between 83 and 85.
Wow. Yeah. You know, that 100 million games sounds low to me. Like, I don't think I know anybody that doesn't have at least one copy of this, or certainly not in the 80s. Everybody had it, didn't they?
Yeah, but you don't know 100 million people, so.
Fair enough, Mo. Factual.
I mean, 10% of the population is how many games that company produced in 2 years. In those first couple of years, that makes sense to me. But what I remember is whether or not I had the game, which we did, somebody within a group of 3 to 4 families had the game.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
That was whose house you went to in the 80s. Every night it was like, oh, we want to play a board game. Who's got Trivial Pursuit? That's how it went.
And it should come as no surprise. In December of 93, Trivial Pursuit was named to the Games Hall of Fame by Games Magazine. Look, if 1 in 3 people's got it, odds are it's going to be on the list. And sure enough, it added to the list. I used to have a subscription to Games Magazine.
I did too.
What a great magazine when you were a kid. I had science and games. Those were the two things I would have. Mm-hmm. They're like the gatekeeper and arbiter of like what games are cool and hip and fun. Or at least they were in the 80s.
They were.
So Hall of Fame. Makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't all roses for the game, though.
No.
A multitude of lawsuits that had been filed about this damn game. When I was going through and doing the research, I was pretty shocked by that because I'm like, what the fuck are you going to sue over? Somebody get mad because a piece of trivia about them was wrong or something? But no, in 1984, a guy named Fred Worth, who had written a book called The Trivia Encyclopedia, Super Trivia and Super Trivia 2, because, you know, it needed a sequel. He filed a $300 million lawsuit against the distributors because he said that more than 1/4 of the questions from the Genus edition, the original one that we all played, had been taken directly from his book, so much so that they even reproduced the purposeful typographical errors that were deliberately placed in those books as misinformation.
Oh,
just to catch people.
Like, one of the questions as an example, was what was Columbo's first name with the answer Philip? And that was put in the book to purposely catch anybody who would steal stuff and repurpose it and republish it for their own reasons. So the guys who invented it, the two guys we talked about earlier, they acknowledged that his books were among their sources.
Okay.
But they argued that this was not improper and that facts are not protected by copyright.
That's what I'm thinking, right?
Actually, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? Facts a fact, right? No, you can't copyright a fact.
District court judge agreed, ruling in favor of them. The decision was appealed. 1987. Here's what gets me. The United States Courts of Appeal, Ninth Circuit said, yep, that's a good ruling. We're keeping that. And then this guy said, fuck you, I'm going to the Supreme Court.
Oh, geez.
And actually took a board game lawsuit to the Supreme Court in 1988, but they denied his claim anyway.
Oh, okay.
Jeez. They said, no, we're not going to hear that case.
I was thinking that same thing of like, well, if it's a trivia book, it's a fact. But I also get the guy's point where he's like, but you just took it verbatim, like with typos and stuff. It sounds like, especially the one that was wrong. Okay, that's a real gimme.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing I'm guessing probably the guy was most upset about is he had already written all of these trivia facts and all these books and didn't think of a way to monetize it as a game. And he was butthurt about it because like, I wish I'd thought of that. I came up with what basically is the most important part of the game, which is the actual trivia. Sorry,
saved them a lot of time.
I mean, it's in the title for a reason. I mean, it's just crazy.
Somebody smarter than you, couple way to use it.
But I guess true, because they probably use encyclopedias and stuff too, I would imagine. Like, they, you know, back in the day, we actually had encyclopedias, and I'm sure they did that too, which again, that's not copyright infringement because you just
right? It's facts, right? I mean, but it wasn't the only lawsuit. I'm not going to go into it in real detail. There was another one that just caught my fancy that I didn't put in our notes, but I just want to tell our audience about it.
There was
a guy who he and his friend were hitchhiking in Canada, and they said they were picked up by one of the creators of Trivial Pursuit several years before the game came out, and that they told him their idea for the Trivial Pursuit game, lock, stock, and barrel. He stole everything. The best part of the story is when they testified, the guy who claimed that his game was stolen by those Trivial Pursuit creators, his mother testified and said, yeah, I found some documents in his bedroom and they were talking about this thing. And I know he did that much earlier than what these guys did, but I don't have them anymore. They were burned up or something.
There we go.
I don't. Oh, geez. What mother would ever allow her child's documents to be burned? My mother still has my shit from the first grade. Don't tell me your mother accidentally burned your Trivial Pursuit creation documents. I don't buy that at all.
You got to wonder, though, like, so I don't necessarily disbelieve the claim that maybe they got the idea from somebody who told them this idea.
Possibly, yeah.
However, isn't there some value to actually having the motivation and the impetus and pushing forward and making the thing versus somebody that had the idea? Now, you could say I should track him down and try to compensate him for it. That's a separate. But did he steal it or was I think every idea is inspired by some other idea?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, where do you stand on that? Intellectual property rights at play there that I couldn't argue you with or against because I don't have that kind of knowledge, but
me either.
I mean, they, for all intents and purposes, nothing in their testimony said that they had put anything pen to paper other than these quote-unquote burned documents that mom lost. I don't think that you really have, and of course their lawsuit was dismissed or settled or some shit like that just to get it out of the way, but it's just crazy that as soon as something is super successful,
there's
going to be somebody trying to cash in through the legal system.
Yeah, for sure.
Even in Canada.
Even in Canada. Yeah. Sorry, eh? Got to sue you.
Yeah. But the thing is that the concept of this game is so basic, you can get right down to it, that there's probably 1,000 people that had a similar idea to create a trivia game like this, you know, or something.
Who was first?
Who was first?
That's valid. Yeah. Okay. Hey, that gets us off on a good start. When we get back from this next break, we're going to talk about how we played the game and all those categories that you either loved or hated. Stick around.
Hi, this is comedian and writer, and let's be honest, I do a lot of things. This is Dino Tripodis, the host of Whiskey Business, the podcast not so much about whiskey as it is one with whiskey. Yes, we drink and talk about whiskey, but we do so much more with so many interesting people. For example, we talk to comedians like Greg Warren.
You know, I don't want to brag, but let's just say I can walk into a Red Lobster and get whatever. You know, I think the pause right there is probably more important than the word.
Amazing athletes like boxing champion Buster Douglas.
When a fighter's down and he's looking for his mouthpiece instead of trying to get up.
That's when I knew it was over.
Yeah, right?
And yes, Bigfoot chasers.
Do you believe in Bigfoot? And if so, does he really eat beef jerky?
The Bigfoot thing is people have seen these, and I've seen a lot of compelling evidence about it.
It's Whiskey Business with Dino Tripodis. Join us for what we call a good conversation with a good pour. You really can't ask for much more than that, can you, people? Check us out at WhiskeyBusinessPod.com, a proud member of the Evergreen Podcast Network.
Be sure to subscribe to or follow Gen X Grown Up wherever you listen. And while you're there, rate and review the show, too. It helps more than you know.
Trivial Pursuit champ Sherman Mernmeyer.
Who is Howdy Doody, sister?
Howdy Doody.
Oh. Name Donald Duck's nephews.
Huey, Dewey, Louie.
Gotta keep my boy in shape. Every time you buy a McDonald's value pack, he gets all his food, bonus fries, and a free Trivial Pursuit sample pack. Quick, the four value packs.
Big Mac value pack, quarter pounder with cheese value pack, chicken McNuggets value pack, and Filet-O-Fish value pack. I'm a lean, mean trivia machine. Free sample pack, that's my attack. Rough, tough, I got this stuff. That's me, gotta be.
You know, guys, I mean, we're talking about the history of this game. We probably should tell people how it's played, right?
I mean, if anybody's listening to this podcast that doesn't know how to play the game,
there's
I would
some
be shocked
there,
but
possibly.
You're probably right.
All
right.
I mean, okay. At least the basics, maybe. Right?
I mean, somebody might be forcing their child to listen to the podcast.
That's
so
good point. Good point.
Firstly, right. We apologize to you that your dad is making you listen to this. Secondarily, this bit's for you because you maybe you've never played. So here we go. Yeah.
So I mean, the gameplay is pretty basic. The board looks like a wheel with six spokes, and there's basically places you can land on all around the edge and on each of the spokes. And each of those spaces has a color. And depending on the color, when you land on it, that's the question you have to answer. And you roll a dice to determine how far you move. Now, where it gets interesting is that you're trying to collect. Basically, you have to answer one correct question from each category. Then you get to the middle. You ask a general question that everyone else picks. And then, you know, you're the winner and you can say you're smarter than everybody else. Right.
But right. But and then the fight.
The real rules, like the actual rules, I don't think I ever actually played because you're only supposed to get that little pie piece if you land on one of the ends of the spokes.
Yeah, the hub.
Right? That's bullshit. If I get a question right, I'm getting a piece of pie. That's all there's to it.
Well, I mean, that's the way I always played it too, because the odds of us, the game would be like 3 days long if we didn't do that. Mm-hmm. You know?
Right, right. I'm just not smart enough to get it right that often frequently.
You know, the thing that always got me to was the board itself.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of the first board games that I remember, and I guess of this type, that there were no real words on the board other than Trivial Pursuit. Everything was a symbol and a color.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's right.
Even the roll again symbols were little white symbols with a weird little priest looking guy who's thrown a die down, which I guess is like saying Catholics are always gambling. I don't know. I'm probably going to get in trouble for saying that. But it was interesting to me. Now, the thing that I loved was, even though the colors were the same for the different categories that you're going to talk about later, Mo, the little icons on the board were different on different spaces.
Yeah.
It was really neat and unique and simple and well-designed, I thought.
Yeah. And of course, like you said, if you answer a question correctly, then you get to roll again. That's like the whole thing that you could keep going like forever, basically, and win the game in one turn,
I guess.
Make
it, take it, like in basketball.
Wasn't there a thing, like someone once told me, I never played this way because I would die. If you got asked a question you already knew anywhere on the board, you could lose your pie. And I, was what? That like the pro version or something? Someone told me was a rule.
I never heard of that. That sounds horrible.
A question you already knew?
You already got right. You already got one of the questions right, and then you had another question in that category and get it wrong, you'd lose the pie that you had.
Oh, yeah. No, that I played like, yes.
Oh, really?
No,
those games last.
Not for me. Yeah, not for me.
That was rough. I'll get into that in a personal anecdote section later on.
Oh.
But yeah.
So George not only did it, but he got into fisticuffs over it. So we're going to do a little learn.
I didn't have my lunchbox with me at the time.
All right. Maybe it didn't draw blood then, but it was something. It was some conflict.
The best part, though, to me is like, in order to win the game, you had to make your way back to the middle on an exact roll.
Right?
And answer a question from the category that everybody else picks.
That they know you suck at.
That you know it was your worst possible category.
Yeah, because like they've watched you play the whole game and you struggled with arts and literature or what the hell ever was your problem category. And they're like, oh, guess which one you're getting. So if you were smart, maybe you could fake them out by pretending to have a hard time with that question.
Or unless you're entering hour three and then they go, which one do you want? I'll give you whatever you want. I just want this to end.
We just want to quit. Yeah. What do you Please want? Get entertainment? It right. Somebody dig through and get a movie from this decade. Let's ask him.
Do you
that
want
question.
A hint? I have a hint for you. Yeah, sometimes you just want it to be over.
You get okay, another chance. Yeah.
Yep.
So speaking of the category, so the basic okay. game, right? Right? The basic game, the original
the
game.
Genus edition, the first
genus.
One.
Yeah. Genus. I kept yeah. saying genius, but it's not the genus.
A lot of There's people no did. A lot of right. people did. Yeah. Yeah. yeah.
And it would have made sense. Why not yeah. call it genius? It's Trivial Pursuit.
I don't
See,
know.
That's the trick. If you call it genius, you're not one because you can't read.
Well, it's like, why does Starbucks call a large coffee venti? That's just stupid. Anyway,
because they can.
Because they can. But let's see. I mean, going through the category, what was there? There was like geography. That was the blue one, right?
Yes. Yeah. Uh-huh. That was. Right. And which was largely, and it sounds self-explanatory, but it could be, you know, what's the capital of this thing? Yes. Or it also could be, you know, what did this country used to be called? Or what yeah, year yeah. did it become some other country? Or
right.
things like that. Anything about a map or lines on a map or names or things like that, that would fall in the blue one. Yeah.
yeah.
And then we had entertainment was one that I would pick a lot or try to pick yeah. a lot because that was where yeah. a lot of pop culture fell. And they, it was the pink sure. one, right?
Yeah.
And yep. it would be, the problem is it wasn't always. Sometimes it would be, oh, what about this movie? What about this TV show? And I'm like, yeah. And then sometimes it's like, what about this opera? I'm like, damn yes. it. I know. That was the problem with the categories is that, yes, they were a category, but it was so broad
yeah.
that nobody had a breadth of knowledge across everything in the category. Most people were kind of specialists in a part of the category.
Well, before we get into the George categories, and you'll understand why I'll say that when we get into them.
Oh, all right.
The category that I actually thought I did the best at, even back when I was in high school when this game came out, was the history category, which was yellow. Mm-hmm. I loved the history category because it felt like a lot of the times the questions were very Jeopardy-like in that Jeopardy would give you things in the question that would kind of lead you to right. the answer. And that's the way the history yeah. ones kind of came across to me a lot. Like I could generally figure out, okay, they're telling me that this thing happened between this and this war. So that was probably around this time mm-hmm. period or something like that. And I could get close enough to get probably 75% of them right.
Yes, that's pretty good.
And it was the same problem that you have with geography or entertainment, right? It's mm-hmm. sure, you know, history. That doesn't mean it's going to be American history. It doesn't mean it's going right. to be 20th right. century history. It could be, oh, well, yeah, what about the Revolutionary War? And then it's like, in ancient Mesopotamia, I'm like, damn it, here we go again. You know, that's another, like, yeah, it's legally history, but...
When did Waterloo happen with Napoleon, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's just, it could be anywhere, because history is everything back to the beginning of recorded time, and they took advantage mm-hmm. of that. And you could get stumped on, like, I know history so well. Oh, no, I don't know this at all.
Honestly, the reason why I said the next three are George categories, because I love to take a section of our podcast and you guys tell me I have to pick one thing and I cram two of them together. And that's what they yes. did with all oh, of the last
combos.
Three categories.
Gotcha. They are combos.
That
yeah.
makes sense.
Yep.
So,
not that they're your best, but
the
they're...
first one is art and literature, right?
Yeah.
I mean, oh, art so, and literature.
Broad.
Oh, I hated
yeah,
that category.
It's so broad.
Oh, Jesus Christ. To this day, I hate that. I have nightmares about this category because I could never answer a single thing for unless I got lucky and I got the Charles Schulz peanuts question. I was fucked every time in that game with this category.
Right. Well, I know Watterson did Calvin and Hobbes, but aside from that, I don't know much art.
Yeah, I would sometimes get lucky with the books. When they ask about books, sometimes I get lucky on those. But okay, then they get sure. into like, yeah. who painted the blah, 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 blah. I'm like, you know.
Da Vinci. Da Vinci. I'll answer yeah. Da Vinci for the rest of the game, and maybe right. I'll get one right.
Who changed the bedpan for the guy that did the cover art for this book that was written by somebody else? Yeah. I'm like, really? Is that a thing people know? That was what yes, always hit does. Me was, does somebody know that? This?
Yeah, somebody
like knows. I understand it's information that you can find out, but does anybody actually have some of this stuff in their head?
Yeah. I mean, apparently must. That guy who sued him when they stole the questions out of his books, I guess he knew it.
But again, it was in his book. I mean, it was in his head.
Yeah,
true.
So the next category is one that was my favorite because this is when I had the highest percentage of getting a right answer, which was science and nature.
Okay.
Oh, that makes sense.
That was yeah. that was a good one for me because if it was like a basic science question or about dinosaurs or, you know, because I watch a lot of nature programs. So mm-hmm. I was like, yeah. now when I say that it was my best category, I'm saying like I'd answer one in three. So
right, even your best. Yeah. Now that was the green pie piece, yes. Right? It was the science and nature. I always thought that was like the color of like a tree or grass or whatever. Mm-hmm. That's how I remembered it was the science and nature.
Yeah,
it made
sense. Green kind of went with that category. Yeah.
Yeah, it did. And much like the others, again, I don't beat the same drum, but it could be anything, but in that broad category, and it's another George because it's science and nature, so it's a lot. But I think I mentioned a little bit earlier that I used to subscribe to two magazines when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Well, two big time magazines, Games and Science, which was always like Science 80 or Science 81. It changed its name.
Right.
And well, I mean, then Atari Age later, that doesn't count. But but because of that, and my dad watching a bunch of Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom helped me with a lot of science and nature stuff, because even that's where I probably got my love of documentaries, is seeing that. And so sometimes it's something that I saw Jacques Cousteau talk about on the TV, and I would get lucky. But that was not the case with the orange pie piece, just freaking sports and leisure.
But you hope for the leisure. You hope for leisure, right?
Yeah, well, that's the problem. They should just call it sports and sports and sports and once in a blue moon leisure, not sports.
Yeah.
And even for people that like sports, the problem is it might be boxing or horse racing or
downhill skiing.
Olympics or, it could be anything.
I'm going to tell you, it's probably no surprise that was my category. I love that. History was the one that I got a lot of questions right in, but you, unless you threw one of those bullshit leisure questions at me, which I don't even know what the hell that means, leisure. I'm just sitting around thinking of trivia.
That's what he asked about board games.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
But sports, especially from the timing, because you got to remember this came out in 81. So the questions that came out were pre 80, 81. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so either my father had educated me on the thing that I would get right in the game, or I had followed it religiously myself because I was so into sports for the first two decades of my life that I was, when I played this game with anybody, sports was going to be my category. That was the first pie piece. And I would beg, you guys want the game to be over? Ask me a sports question.
So George, you just mentioned one of your favorite ones. So that's actually good. Mm-hmm. So here's a question like for all of us, what was your best and worst? So if sports was your best, what was your worst category?
100% arts and leisure. Hate arts that and fucking guy. Arts and what, literature?
Arts and literature.
Arts and literature.
Doesn't matter. Yeah. Any one of those three, I can't fucking answer anything in them because, hated that category. That was the brown tile, right? Wasn't it?
Yeah. It was brown and purple. God. I think they might have changed colors.
It was shit brown. Trust me. I hated that category. Oh, God.
Oh, man.
What about you, Mo?
Oh, mine was, let's see. My best was definitely science and nature, for sure.
Science
my
and nature.
Worst, okay. Probably sports and leisure is probably my worst because, I mean, if it was recent sports, like if they asked sports like in the 80s for a big name sport like basketball, I probably could get it. But then they went back to like freaking who won this boxing match in 1961. did boxing exist in 1961?
In the second Olympic Games, which gladiator?
Right? Yeah, exactly.
Damn the things.
What about yours, John?
Oh, well, I think I have the same worst category. It's probably sports and leisure. And it's just like it's not that you don't have to be a sports fan to do okay in sports and leisure, but it helps certainly because you pay more attention to sports stuff. It's just that the things they wanted to know were well beyond the scope of just a casual observer. They didn't want to know who won the Super Bowl this year. They wanted to know who was the backup quarterback for this Super Bowl that they won. You know, and I don't know people's names. I'm like, well, I think the helmet was blue. You know, I'm like, I don't remember that kind of detail.
I remember when we used to play You Don't Know Jack, John would always be like, John Elway, be a baseball just,
that's
question.
My, you know,
John
that's Elway, my always, whatever. That's my only sports answer. Yep. John Elway. Eventually it's right is the thing. One day.
Right. Exactly.
You do get it right once in a while.
A broken clock is right twice a day.
That's right. My favorite was probably, I also like the science and nature, but if I have to pick, if I had my pick, I usually pick entertainment because my breadth of knowledge across entertainment, just because it was screwing around. It was doing the stuff, it was watching TV and movies. That was stuff like, I don't know a lot of that crap. It's just when they started asking, it was one thing to go, who won the Oscar, but it was something else to go, who was the key grip on that movie or something, you know, that was
right.
They could get you. So entertainment was probably the one I would pick the most.
I mean, before we move on to the next section of the podcast, I just want to point out something that I'm looking at one of the pictures of the original board, you know, that blue board with the hub and spoke and all the images.
Mm-hmm.
And it just dawned on me, there's something very Rubik's Cube-y about the board. And I remember thinking about it back then, but I completely forgot about it until we started talking about this podcast. The hub and spokes at the very end of them, they're opposite of each other. So, for instance, the brown hub part at the end of its spoke is surrounded by three yellow categories.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And on the opposite side is a yellow hub surrounded by three brown, and so forth all the way around the board. And I wonder to this day what those categories needed to have in common for them to do the board design that way, because everything else looks fairly randomly placed except for the hubs at the end of the spokes.
Yeah.
I remember noticing that, and I always kind of felt that they put diametrically opposed things. Like, I'm not looking at the board, but I'm guessing, like, they don't put arts and literature opposed with entertainment, because they're both kind of,
it's
you
not,
know.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you would put sports up against entertainment, maybe. So you're trying to get down to that spot to get a pie, and you miss it by one. You're like, damn it, it's my worst one. And then the deal was, if you got it right, you got to go again.
Right.
But if you didn't, you had to move on. And so the thing was, you're trying to get down to that one. And if you miss it or overshoot it, you're screwed, because you're not going to go again, because there's going to be a one that's bad for you. So it was kind of Rubik's Cubey, now that you talk about it. Yeah. It's and bright, vibrant colors, just like it.
Right.
Yeah, perfect for the '80s. Now, when we get back from the break, we're going to talk about how Trivial Pursuit moved on well beyond that original Genus edition in 81, many, many different iterations and even variations of the board game. A lot of them. We're going to talk about it. Not all of them, because there's too many, but we're talking about some of them right after this.
What was it like to be there for historical sports moments and unforgettable performances? To be behind the scenes? On PressBox Access, you'll hear from me, Todd Jones, and other sports writers about their experiences with the greatest athletes, coaches, and sports events of the past half century. We'll share some stories behind the stories, some big, some small, and some we've only told each other. Let us buy you a round on PressBox Access.
Each episode of Gen X Grown Up has show notes loaded with links where you can learn more about our topics. And there's even more to see and hear over at GenXGrownUp.com.
The game of Trivial Pursuit has gone 80s.
Totally 80s.
Trivial Pursuit. Won the mad run.
Who phoned who?
Who's mean and greedy? Total 80s.
What sport was played by the guy Kareem?
Total 80s.
Who played the vain weird science mage?
Trivial Pursuit.
What cube took time?
Who's Optimus Prime?
Remember more than you know.
As many questions as there are in a Trivial Pursuit game, there are that many goddamn variations of this game out there.
I think you're right.
Oh my God. Doing the research on this thing, I found like a Wikipedia page that just talks about editions. And you know how you have the little wheel on your mouse that you scroll down to go through an article on a webpage? Mm-hmm. It was like 30 wheel scrolls to get to the bottom of this damn page.
It's a lot.
It was ridiculous. And they're just one line for each edition. It's not like they gave us a crap ton of information that I was scrolling through. It's literally like hundreds of editions. One of the things that I think is interesting, because of the timing of when this game came out, 1981, as we talked about earlier, they released a lot of these editions or variations on the computer. And there was a British software company named Domark, and they released a home computer version billed as Trivial Pursuit, quote, or colon, the computer game for a whole bunch of different formats during the 1980s, which included pictorial and music questions.
That's cool. Yeah.
But other than that, it was pretty much the same game as the original board game. But you get that extra thing that you couldn't have on a board game. You couldn't have video. You couldn't have audio.
Oh, true.
But they gave it to you in that computer variation.
That's nice.
Remember what they called computers back then in, you know, in the early 90s? Multimedia computers.
Oh, right.
Which meant, exactly. Oh, it has pictures and sound. Upscale. But yeah, that had to add so much to Trivial Pursuit. And you got to, people are dying for those, because they probably only had a few hundred sound and pictures, right. Because you can't fit that much on a CD. But
that's true.
That
that's
is
true.
Cool.
Yep. None of them were high definition. I guarantee
that. No, they were 240 pixels by 130 pixels. They were very tiny. Yeah. Squint, tell me what this looks like. Go.
And those pixels were ginormous, by the way. They were not small, highly detailed, little smaller. No.
Nope. I downloaded a lot of pixels off the internet. Well, the internet, BBSs back in the day. One line at a time. One line at a time.
Yep.
It also got adapted beyond just playing games. They did variations. They did adaptations and reissues and stuff. I thought it was interesting. I never saw this, but the Family Channel did a TV game show, a television version in the early 90s, hosted by Wink Martindale.
Oh,
of course.
Now, the thing is, it's just a trivia TV show, but they use the mechanics of Trivial Pursuit. Oh, you got to get your piece of pie. You know, they just use that to map it on because it wasn't the first trivia show on TV. Every game show is a trivia show almost.
I would have loved to have seen that combined with a version of the TV game show Double Dare. That would have been awesome.
Combined, right.
Like the people had to jump in their piece of the pie and swim it around or something like that.
Fight for it and go. Right.
That'd be more exciting, but. You know, there was actually a BBC television show, too, they did. So I had no idea, but apparently they did one in UK also. So this thing had worldwide popularity, apparently.
Yeah. Makes sense.
But of course, like, I think about 2003, they came out with this online version, which actually I guess was kind of cool because it was online. I guess the questions could constantly be fresh and they could update and all that kind of stuff.
Oh,
Yeah, but they were already too late. You don't know Jack had kicked their ass in the computer space for trivia, as far as I was concerned at that point.
Yeah.
That was by far the better trivia game. Still to this day, I enjoy a You Don't Know Jack game, like a real You Don't, not the Jackbox party games, but You Don't Know Jack. Oh, I still love that way more than Trivial Pursuit.
Yeah, I do too.
Well, but that's it. Like, You Don't Know Jack was effectively the multimedia Trivial Pursuit because they had all sorts of auditory questions and, you know, interpret this and listen to a sound questions and pop culture woven in between. It was a smarter, cleverer, more entertaining version of what some people might call kind of a straight, it's almost, Trivial Pursuit's like a button-down kind of board game. Like, you could play it over tea with a vest on.
Trivial Pursuit is the professor at the university in Harvard, and You Don't Know Jack is like the drunk teacher at your local community college.
I thought you were going to say one's the professor and one's Gilligan, but both of those work.
Well, yeah, that works too.
Well, speaking of TV, in 1988, there was a made-for-television movie titled Breaking All the Rules, The Creation of Trivial Pursuit. So this wasn't an adaptation of the game, but a retelling of the creation of the game.
Oh, okay.
It was pseudo-historical, I guess, but it was mostly a comedy. It had music by Jimmy Buffett, and it portrayed those creators who we named earlier of the game as three beer-loving Canadians.
Did they pick up a hitchhiker on the side of the road who they stole the game from?
Maybe so. I haven't seen it. I don't know. And finally, I had to grab this one. It is a great thing. And I played this game in 84. Ballycente released a Trivial Pursuit arcade game.
Really?
It's garbage. Right. So don't play it.
I was going to ask you, how was it?
Incredibly low res. And the questions were, I even played this in a bar, not in an arcade, but I think I played it in a bar. And the thing about this is they could put it in those table bar top kiosk things, the whatever those things are called, you know, some stand up arcade. But I remember it had, I think, four color buttons, like yellow, blue, green, and red or whatever. And those are the buttons you push because it was multiple choice because you couldn't. Nope. It was a multiple choice.
That's right, better.
Unlike, well, easier, certainly.
Yeah.
But it was all kind of bland. But they did have some multimedia stuff. Like, they would show a little picture and stuff like that occasionally, which I'm, you know, based on the computer game, that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and they didn't stop there. Hasbro Interactive, they released a Millennium Edition in 1999 for all of the generation that hates us and calls us boomers all the time. they had three different modes in the thing, and it had some different categories like Classic Pursuit, Party Pursuit, because, you know, you think of party when you're playing Trivial Pursuit, and Point Pursuit, which was like a scoring version of the game. They were trying to cash in on the craze, and they kept doing it. You got to realize, 1999, that's 18 years after the original game's release, and they're still coming up with new things because this thing is still making money. When you go to your Walmart, What are you going to see? You're going to see Risk. You're going to see Monopoly. Mm-hmm. You're probably going to find a Trivial Pursuit game.
Yep.
And the thing that is really interesting is all the additions. Now, what we've been talking about are variations of Trivial Pursuit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right.
But there are specific additions that I don't classify them as variations. These are just like reclassifying or drilling down onto a specific subject and putting it into the Trivial Pursuit game format.
Yeah, George, you're right. And one of my favorite, I mean, one of the ones I actually played and did well on, so I was very happy with, was the Star Wars version. They had a Star Wars zone, which
makes sense.
Like, and the categories, they were like the characters, the weapons and vehicles, the history, geography, droids, creatures and aliens. And then there was a wild card one, which would be like any question.
Oh, that's great. So now it's like you can be a specialist in Star Wars, and now it's just digging into your fandom.
Exactly.
I can imagine the much less stress. Like, I don't much have to know, you know, I didn't even know about the pyramids in ancient Egypt. I just know about the thing I like. Yeah.
Now, that's the cool. problem is, though, when you're playing with other people who are also like really into it, if you get something wrong, it's like you don't hear the end of it.
You're the guy that didn't know the name of this thing. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah.
There are people that will argue with the game. Actually, it should be.
Well, it's commonly thought that's true, but you really, it turned out it was such and such. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I know
that's not canon, so they can't put that in this game.
That was just in a comic book.
One game that I would love to play an edition of with YouTube, especially for money, is the sports edition. I think that makes a lot of sense.
No.
I mean, listen to the categories. They had nicknames. They had football.
Nope.
They had catch-all, basketball, baseball. Mm-mm. And John, for you, numbers. I mean, you can't lose with that.
Well, it's going to be stupid jersey numbers. It's not going to be like math.
Or stats.
Oh, my God. Stats. Right. I couldn't even tell you what a good batting number is. It's 1,000? 800? I don't know.
It's a percentage, damn it.
Oh, okay. All right. Anyway. Oh, they...
Depends how many field goals they get.
Then you could do ones that I might do better at. So they did one that was, rather than just like a single fandom, like Star Wars or something, did one about Warner Brothers. So they picked like a body of work.
Mm.
And the categories of that is like movies, Warner Brothers movies, cartoons, television, classics, behind the scenes. And then kind of like your catch-all, they had Anything Goes, which is great because that's also the name of a great movie.
Like there's always a wild card in these and they just name it differently. Wild card, catch-all, Anything Goes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I don't know if I want to play with money with you guys on that, but I think we could all enjoy that one without having to worry about the crazy off the wall questions. Yeah. And there's no sports in it, which is great.
You don't know. This sports movie.
Because Warner Brothers didn't do sports, right? Less of a sports movie. Who did Hoosiers? I had to check it. I don't know.
They did a sports cartoon, maybe, right?
Maybe.
Casey at the Bat could be in there.
Okay, yeah, okay. Okay.
Another one they did, actually, they did a Lord of the Rings version, which came out like right after the third movie.
Oh. I could crush on that.
There's a lot in there.
Actually, don't be so quick on that.
Why?
I play some of these things. These questions, you need to be like, dig, because it wasn't just the movies. It was also the books. So they went into serious detail on these about the land that Gandalf came from, blah, 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 blah. And what was the name of his sword? What was the name? I mean, I saw some of these questions and I was like, holy crap. Some I could get, like the basic ones.
Yeah.
But who was Gimli's father? I mean, it was like, holy crap. I mean, some of it was very detailed.
So what kind of categories did it have?
So it had things like good characters and then evil characters. It's two separate characters.
Oh, that makes sense. Okay. Yeah.
Opposite sides of that board.
Yep. Things, which is like swords and ring. Place and history, which is hell. That one was terrible.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Warfare, about all the battles. And then about making the movies. They actually had one about the movie.
Oh, specifically about the movies. That had to be cool.
That would be cool.
That was the easier one.
Yeah.
But even the warfare one. How many of these die? I'm like, I'm sure it's mentioned in the book somewhere.
How many teeth were knocked out when?
Yeah.
How many fingers were cut off of Sauron's hand when he lost the ring?
There's one that I would like to pick up that I've never seen from 2006 called Totally 80s.
Oh, Lord. Oh, we would crush on that.
You're playing into the stereotype with that accent. What are you doing?
Well, it's, you know, they're stereotypes for reasons, dude. I mean, they're out there. So. But this had categories. It was not entirely unlike regular Genus edition. It's just that it was all focused around our favorite decade. So you had headlines, television, movies, music. So right there, the middle three of them are the things I know. TV, movies, music. Great. That's a good start. Right? But then they still had sports and leisure. And then, like you said, George, they had a wild card that could be just doesn't quite fit anything else. But at least it was like it didn't happen in the 20s when I wasn't alive. I have a chance of having heard about
it. You have a chance.
Because I was alive and paying attention to things. So if I could find one of those, but it's now, what is that? I don't know, 18 years old, 17 years old or something. It's probably still out there somewhere.
Well, I mean, lest anybody think that they stopped making new editions of this Trivial Pursuit game at some point because, you know, they whatever happened, happened. In 2019, they're still creating new editions of Trivial Pursuit. And this one, John, may be your favorite 80s version because, believe it or not, there are four different 80s versions of Trivial Pursuit.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Right? Well, hey, we're that important.
But listen at the categories for the 2019 Back to the 80s edition.
I'm in. Do it.
Movies, TV, music, right? Awesome. You like all those. Famous people and events.
Yeah, pretty good.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Trends.
Okay. Yeah. Cool. Leg warmers. Got it.
Tech and fun.
Dark Tower.
Sounding like a podcast, you know, right?
Yeah.
And the best category in any Trivial Pursuit game, for my mind, Stranger Things. They have a category specifically dedicated to Stranger Things TV show, I guess. I don't know.
Do you think so? I bet you that's just their name for the Wildcard channel. Stranger Things would be a great name for a random.
Fucking brilliant marketing.
Oh, yeah.
Either way.
Yeah. Either way. And it's just from when? 2019? All right.
2019.
Dear Amazon. I got to check this. Okay. You've heard us mention some of our experiences playing this game thus far. So in the next segment, when we get back, we're going to talk about some of our most memorable times playing this game and what came of those memorable times and what happened. So we'll be right back.
Are you tired of seeing your teen or young adult struggle on a path that clearly isn't the right fit? Is your teenager confused about which direction to take after high school? The future of work is changing rapidly, and our kids need to know all of the options available after high school so they're empowered to make the choice that is best for them. In each episode, we explore the latest trends that are shaping the opportunities of today and tomorrow. I'm your host, Betsy Jewell, and this is the High School Hamster Wheel Podcast.
If you're a diehard Gen X grown-up, you can pledge your support by clicking join on YouTube or by becoming a patron at genxgrownup.com/patreon.
I'm here to tell you about new Trivial Pursuit card sets. Three sets of cards so you don't have to buy a whole new game.
There's like this groovy 60s card set, man, with questions just about the 60s.
And you don't have to buy a whole new game, just a new card set.
Like the 80s. Who could forget the 80s? Well,
And how about those vintage years?
Oh, man, you don't have to buy a whole new game.
Bow! Trivial Pursuit card sets. Just pick a set you can relate to.
So we're back and we're talking now about some of our most memorable play sessions of Trivial Pursuit. I think this is one of those games where you could just play and play and play. And like Monopoly, then there's that time we played and this happened, you know?
Yeah.
So, one time at band camp.
Yeah.
Ooh. Yeah.
So why don't we start with you, Mo? Can you share with us one of your most memorable play sessions or memories around Trivial Pursuit?
Oh my God, yeah. I mean, I'm sure I've told the story before because it's like
sounds
one of my
like
favorite
he's got
stories.
PTSD about it.
I do because
his face is in his hands.
It was one of the few times I played with my dad. And now my dad had the most he read a ton. His memory was amazing. So we were playing with him, getting our asses kicked just the whole game.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And
okay.
it was like me and a friend against him. It wasn't like
teamed up.
We were teaming up against and we're still losing. So he lands on history and then he gets a question. And, you know, you ever get the question, you look at it, you're like, oh, yeah, there's no way to get in this one. And you kind of get that little grin like, before you read it.
You can't wait to ask.
You can't wait. So and I still to this day, I remember the question. Who lives at 11 Downing Street?
Not 10 Downing Street.
Not
but 10,
11 Downing Street.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So me and my friend are like giggling. And my dad says, the Chancellor of the Exchequer. I'm like, what the hell is that?
wait. First, what's an Exchequer? Does anybody know?
I had to look this up. up. Okay. My dad had to explain this answer to me afterward. I'm like, what the? Basically, it's their treasure.
Okay.
And so I was like, are you kidding me? He's like, well, you know, the prime minister lives at 10 Downing Street, and then, you know, so-and-so lives at 12 Downing Street, so the only one left was...
He knew who was down the street.
The only one left. That's what gets me. Like, well, he knows them all. He did it by process of elimination.
It was a simple process of elimination. Exactly where I was going. I know all facts.
My dad answered it. One reason this is like a fond memory is my dad was just relishing answering this question. You know, like,
oh, punks.
He was just like, oh, you know, and then we said the answer. We were like, it just blew us away. We were just like, at that point, I think we're like, yo, can we just say you won and let's just move on?
That's when you rage quit, flip the table, and just the board goes everywhere at that point.
So that was mine. All right, so that's mine. George, you got one?
Yeah, you know, this game, it came out in 1981, as we talked about earlier, and I went to high school in 1985. I went through the first couple of years of high school doing mostly sports and other related type of activity. So football, baseball, mm-hmm. basketball, mm-hmm. track and field, that kind of thing. My junior year, I ended up kind of having a thing for one of the girls in school who was a senior, and mm-hmm. she, I think, kind of liked me, and she invited me to Brain Bowl practice because uh-huh. she was okay. one of those kids that was into the Brain Bowl and debate club and stuff like that. Well, actually, we started the debate. Anyway, long story. When we went to Brain Bowl, we had to figure out a way to practice for ourselves because the person at the school, the custodian guy who was in charge, not the custodian like janitor, but like mm-hmm. the guy who was in charge of the group, really had no way to help us prepare for these Brain Bowl competitions. Like, this guy didn't have a fucking clue. Really mm-hmm. didn't. Like, he was in charge of it and he got accolades for that, but couldn't answer a single question.
He wasn't so much a good coach. He just was there for along for the ride, kind of.
He was the guy with the keys to the room that could let us in and lock up afterwards. That was about it for him. So one of the things that we used as a tool was Trivial Pursuit. And makes we would sense. Literally, like, at first we were playing the game and we were playing that hard version that you guys talked about mm-hmm. earlier, this I was going to reference later, where if you missed a question, they took that fucking piece out of your pie chart thingy.
That was brutal.
And those sessions would last for like 4 or 5 hours finish one game because it was a tough game, but it taught us a lot of trivia, which was very useful to us in the Brain Bowl thing. It prepared us for getting sharp. We used to use buzzers so anybody could answer the question, mm-hmm, you know, because mm-hmm. we were trying to do the timing element thing. Eventually, we got to the point where we just stopped using the board and it was just, we would go through the cards and you would have to answer every question on the card and then move on to the next card and so on and so forth. And we just went through every single card. Remember, they came with those two boxes of cards.
Yeah. You flip them front to back. Yeah.
Yeah. And we would just go through those things every day after school for like an hour or two when we had Brain Bowl practice. It was exhausting. It was mentally just tiring to no end. But I really think that is where I developed my love for trivia, far more than playing the game with anyone else or the little trivia. Remember those smart Mr. Wizard things that you would plug together?
Electronic toys?
In the 70s.
Quiz Whiz.
Quiz Whiz. There you go. Yeah. This was where I developed my true love of trivia, was from these Brain Bowl sessions in high school.
I'm curious. Do you happen to remember like any questions you covered rehearsing the Trivial Pursuit that actually paid off when you went to a competition? Or was it just general knowledge that helped you?
Well, so the categories that paid off the most, because you remember, I went to a private religious high school. Mm-hmm. So certain categories were not going to make it into those Brain Bowl competitions.
Oh,
right?
Okay.
But the ones that I remember specifically paying off, history was really, really big until you got to biblical history. And then we didn't, because there was none of that in Trivial Pursuit, really.
Oh, okay.
There's like maybe one question about Moses and Abraham or something. Right. And that was about it. Science and nature was really big. And the art side of art and literature was pretty big in those. They didn't really do the literature in the Brain Bowl competitions because it was more secular than religious. So
those
three categories really did a lot for us in those competitions. Okay. The sports, almost nothing.
Worthless. Just fun.
Right. John, what about you? Did you have any kind of a personal anecdote that you wanted to share with the audience?
For sure. Yeah. Mine is also attached to school. So when I was in high school, the last 2 or 3 years of high school, I had the same English teacher because she was the English teacher for college preparatory, for advanced placement English. And I was pretty good with writing and reading and stuff like that. So ish enough, smart enough that I got in these courses. And she was by far my favorite teacher ever. I mean, she is the best educator, certainly up through K through 12, that I ever had.
What was her name?
Her name was Barbara Clark.
Ah.
Things about her I could tell you that still make me smile. She graded papers with two pens, one red and one purple. If she's going to correct you, she wrote it in red. If it was a good thing, she wrote it in purple. And you get a paper back and just flip through, looking for purple, looking for purple. Like, oh, here's something she liked. You know, she'll say, you know, nice alliterative language or whatever she'd say in there, you know. Anyway, when I was in a senior in AP English with her, one thing she would do, and it was just like 20 kids in the whole class, right? It was a small-ish class because not everybody made that course, but she would invite us to her home. Ah. It would be like a potluck. We'd all bring a dish. Mm-hmm. And often we would like watch a movie that was either an adaptation or something of a novel we had read in the class or whatever. Just, you know, socially. It wasn't like for work. It was just like a reward. You know, we're going to do this twice a year and do these things. And one of the things we would often do is after watching the movie, we would play Trivial Pursuit. So she had her version. She would break it out. And I don't remember doing great at it or poor at it. I just remember in the moment, like I'm in a teacher's home. Mm-hmm. She's welcomed me in. We're all eating whatever food we brought. We're hanging out with kids outside. So it's school-ish because it's kids from this one class. But we're all, you know, we're all doing okay in Trivial Pursuit because we made it to AP English. We know something, right?
Right.
And I just I remember how the games went. I just remember I can't think of Trivial Pursuit without imagining, like, I can see her house. I can see mm-hmm. her dining room. I can see we had it spread out on the coffee table in the living room where we've been sitting watching the movie. And it was because this teacher had expanded on her curriculum to bring these kids into her home beyond. Now, I don't know how kosher that would be today. People would go, oh, you can't cross the line and do whatever. But this was 86, 87. And it was a highlight of my education. And it had Trivial Pursuit baked right into it. And it was just a great memory of growing up. And it was. And so now Trivial Pursuit makes me smile because it reminds me of that teacher and those nights eating lasagna and pizza pockets or whatever people brought, watching some dumb movie that I didn't want to see in black and white, and then playing this game together. And it was great fun.
That's cool.
Nice.
I think probably anybody you ask has stories like this around Trivial. If they played it, it's not a game, pardon the pun, it's not a trivial game. It's important in people's lives, I think, because it was so prevalent. Odds are you played it and it was memorable at least once. So I'll put the call out to the fourth listeners. If you remember a specific anecdote or a special time you played Trivial Pursuit or a crazy question that your dad got right that you shouldn't have or something, please write in and let us know. I think we'd love to hear about it. Whew. All right. I've got all my pie pieces. I'm in the middle. rather than ask a question, I will just once more remind everyone how much we love and appreciate our Patreon supporters over at genxgrownup.com/Patreon. For as little as $1 a month, you could also become one of those supporters and ensure that we continue to do what we do, delivering this show to you and so much more. That's going to wrap it up for this edition of the show. Don't worry. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another backtrack. And next week is the standard edition of our show. Until then, I'm John. George, thank you so much for being here.
Yes, sir.
Mo, you know I appreciate you.
Always fun, man.
Fourth listener, it's you, though, we all appreciate most of all. And we'll talk to you again next time. Bye-bye.
See you guys.
Take care, everybody.
No life, no fun. Don't you know that you're a grown-up?
Gen X Grown-Up is a member of the Evergreen Podcast family. Learn more at evergreenpodcasts.com.
No more washy shows till sunrise. Unacceptable for grown-ups. Your dinner cannot just be french fries. Basically, life sucks as a grown-up.
We love that you wrote in, Michael. Thank you. Sorry, what?
I was going to do a funny thing.
Oh. No, we're going to continue. You're going to do the funny thing. Okay, got it.
He's going to make it funny. Come on.
I'm Bruce Martin, host of Pit Pass Indy. Each week, I go behind the scenes of the NTT IndyCar Series and introduce our listeners to the biggest stars of IndyCar, which features the Indianapolis 500 as its cornerstone event. The men and women that compete in IndyCar may be the bravest athletes in all of sport, as danger lurks around every corner. They are able to look danger in the eye without flinching.
That is why the NTT IndyCar Series features the best racing on the planet. Join me every week as we talk to the stars of IndyCar, including the legends of the Indianapolis 500, on Pit Pass Indy from Evergreen Podcast.